Salutations, folks. We've got another week of IC Squared. Pierce Cavanaugh here for Indy Cornrows. Welcoming back to the show, Scott Agnes, for a return engagement. Scott was on in the dead of summer, and Scott, it's a lot closer now to the NBA season. How are you holding up?
I'm doing well. I'm about ready to get these games underway. Honestly, I've been telling people, it feels like we're 10, 15 games into the regular season. That's how long it feels like we've been at it. So games in less than a week, all is good.
Scott, of course, from Pacers.com, he had the chance. First of all, let's get to this right off the bat, because I actually wanted to talk with you about this. You got the chance to share the airwaves with Pacers legend Mark Boyle for a recent preseason game. Why don't you tell us how that went?
Yeah, it went really well. I really enjoyed the experience. People may or may not know that broadcasting is actually what I'm really interested in. The area of focus I'd really like to get into eventually, whether it be play-by-play or whatever. But, the opportunity presented itself. And so on the Saturday when the team was in Cleveland, I was back in the 1070 The Fan studios and handled the studio gigs of a lot of basically you're hosting the pregame show and halftime. And then Mr. Boyle will come to you in the midst of the game. I'll reset things going into the second and fourth quarter. And yeah, it was a tremendous experience and definitely one I'd love to do again. Mark's honestly one of the best, if not the best, play-by-play guy in the NBA by far. And so it was just an honor to work with him and be on the airwaves of MS Communication.
Yeah, Mark Boyle, as all fans listening, I'm sure, are aware of, is absolutely tremendous at what he does. And for an aspiring broadcaster already with a decent job with Pacers.com, I'd imagine it would have been a great experience. Is there anything surprising about it?
Nothing in particular. You got to hit your brakes. You have to be prepared for those. You obviously have to get your sponsor reads in. But just how smooth and on a flash he can do something is just tremendous. And he really knows the business, knows what should be done. And so I was certainly all ears and listening to any advice he had for me.
He's a guy that I would love to have on this show a little later, and hopefully that's something that we can swing. We'll get to that and some other stuff maybe a little later on. That'll be another story for another show. I've got some stuff to talk with you about right now, namely the fact the Pacers nailed their marks on the dress rehearsal last night against Atlanta. They made the Hawks look bad. And now the Hawks actually might be bad. We don't know if they're a decent team at all. But the bench actually stepped up big time. Luis Scola was impressive. The starters, including David West, hit their marks. Paul George looked on point. What do you like so far? Are we getting an indication of this team rolling around a little bit? What did you see against Atlanta?
Yeah, I think they're finally hitting their strides. The first game is the first game. There was a lot of hoopla with it, being the Bulls, the return of Granger, the return of Derrick Rose. So it had no feel whatsoever as a preseason game. Then they made that long 18-hour trip to the Philippines and then Taiwan. That took a ton out of them. They won't tell you how much it did, honestly. So then it took a game or two to get, back into rhythm, get back in their sleep patterns and those things. And then these last couple of games in Cleveland and then most recently in Atlanta, after the first quarter, they've excelled, and you've seen different guys step up, especially in this last game against Atlanta, where you saw Scola score 16 of his 20 points, I believe, in the fourth quarter. Pacers aren't used to having a bench player that can do that, and he doesn't have to do that by any means every night, but there's going to be times when that's going to be needed, and he's certainly willing to do that and can do it when called upon.
Scola impressed me, too, just because I've been excited from the start because he's got the little Sasha Vujacic headband and the floppy Argentinian hair, but he's actually a decent player. What has he brought? We've talked about it ad nauseum, but that was the first real Luis Scola that I think we've seen.
Yeah, I'd agree, Pierce. I mean, he just played tremendous in that fourth quarter in particular, and he's a guy that I think I've talked about this before. I'm not sure whether it's on your podcast or not, but the fact that, the first practice, Coach Vogel afterwards saw him out. The second practice, Coach Vogel saw him out again. And, he went over to him, tried to pick his brain. Not only is he an excellent player, but he brings a tremendous IQ on this team. And some wits and some crafty and savviness whatever words you want to use for him with that second unit. I think we're going to see some of him and David West play at times. There's so many ways and so many lineups, honestly, that Coach Vogel can mix and match this roster. It's really an interesting thing.
I'm a little worried about for just one thing. Is if we're on the bench, I know that a lot of the preseason has been throwaway time and guys are trying to get ingrained. Chris Copeland has me interested. Just to switch gears to him really quick, I know he sparked the bench against Cleveland, but he shot 15 times. I think he hit 5 or 6 shots. That has me a little concerned just about what his role is going to be. I know he's going to be more of a spot guy than a regular rotation. At least that's my feel.
I think he's going to be a rotation guy in that second unit. He really, truly opened up to me the other day at practice. We were asking about his shooting, and he was like, to be candid with y'all, I'm feeling the pressure, is basically what he said. He's feeling the pressure of his first guaranteed contract. He's feeling the pressure of the fans, you know, hey, Copeland, we're glad you're on our side this year. You can do that shooting. So I think right now he's really fighting those early jitters. He's still trying to get comfortable with the system. There's been a couple times in practice they've stopped, and he's had to ask a question or a point, am I supposed to be there or there? And I think that will work itself out in about a month or less. I'm not worried about that. As for his role, I think it's honestly straightforward, at least is how I see it. I think he's going to come in. He has that quick release. He's going to get some points up. He'll score in a hurry. Coach Vogel keeps saying he's more than just a shooter. He can score. I think we'll see. That remains to be seen. I'm curious about that. But with his role with this team, I think he can add a lot once he gets going.
So are we going to see a little less Jan Mahimi?
Yes, I think so. I think he's the odd man. Not necessarily out, but he's the first guy that's going to lose minutes from last year, put it that way. I think going back to what I said a minute ago with the different lineups, you could see Copeland at the 4, West at the 5. There's so many different ways, and I think, Jan truly has struggled in this preseason. I think he'd admit that. So many little things like catching the ball. He's got this drill in practice that he's done to end it, where he with one hand he bats the ball about 5 feet, just with the one hand back and forth, trying to get that comfort, trying to get those reps really. And until he can produce, until he can do something like that, I do see his minutes getting eaten into a little bit by these newcomers like Skoll, like Copeland.
That's the one thing that concerns me a little bit. I said this when Skoll was first brought in, that either Copeland or Mahimi was going to have to be the odd guy out, and that takes some different connotations with it. Ian Levy, always tremendous of Hickory High, said the same thing. And I'm not so concerned about losing Mahimi's offensive game because he doesn't have much of one. But defensively, the guy is a decent stand-in for Roy Hibbert as a 7-footer who can protect the rim. We saw that a few times in the Miami series, and that seems really more central to the team's identity. I know that they needed some scoring off the bench, but does it come at the expense of defense in Jan Mahimi's case?
You make a valid point there. Number one is he is a defender. He's really learned, like Roy Hibbert has, to go straight up and has done that fairly well. To get after it, I forget what game it was, maybe Dallas at home. In about 18 minutes, I want to say, he had 6 rebounds, and 4 of them came at the offensive end. It's not as much as scoring, but the little things, catching the ball, swinging it, finding an open man, going after the boards and corralling it. Just some little things like that I think he needs to improve upon.
Yeah, I just like the way that he can play as the central cog in Vogel's defensive scheme. We heard all this stuff about Roy Hibbert having offense funneled to him, and we saw it in spades against New York, just as we saw it most of the year. That was the first time national media paid attention to it. But Jan Mahimi, like I said, gave a decent impersonation of that in limited time off the bench. I know the rest of the bench was a truck fire, and it's not going to be that way this year, I think, with the offensive pieces they have. But I still wonder just if that's going to take some adjustment period for Indiana, having a different identity, you could argue, coming off the bench than you have starting.
I see that, Pierce, for sure, and the fact that there's so many pieces, and Vogel has the tough duty now to make it all work, to find his rotations. We've seen Granger come off the bench first. In the past, It's been other players will be scoreless. There's been times when Copeland hadn't played. A lot of that's just because of the preseason. So I think I was talking to Larry Bird, Pacers president, in training camp, and I was asking how long did it take for him to get really comfortable, you know, in a new season after the off season. He said it took him 5 regular season games. So I really don't think it's safe to judge up until at least that point where Vogel's comfortable. Remember, he's dealing with a new coaching staff. I think that's an X factor that you got to certainly take into consideration as well. Those guys certainly have to get on the same page. And then there's just so many moving parts, whether it be Orlando Johnson. Right now it seems like he's earning some minutes, but he might just be outside the rotation. There's so many questions there at this point.
Yeah, OJ is somebody I'd like to see get some time. I want to go back to what you said about Vogel. Is there a difference from how the coaching staff has interacted this year? I know all those new guys in the mix can toss things around a little bit. Have you noticed anything adjustment-wise from last year? Obviously, you lose Shaw and you get these new guys in.
Not quite yet. There's been a few little things. After nearly every practice last year, Shaw would talk trash with Paul George, Lance Stephenson, and then a couple others would join in, whether it be, you know, George Hill or Gerald Green, and they'd have that shooting contest. They haven't done much of that, but again, I think that's because of preseason, and once practice is done, they want to get off their legs, get some rest. Then the other thing I've been surprised at, one observer at practice, because we're only allowed to see, you know, maybe 15 minutes of practice, one observer at a recent practice told me that he was so surprised at the fact how little Popeye Jones talked. Just an interesting point. I'm not sure what to read into that, but that kind of surprised me, I guess.
I never thought of Popeye Jones as a quieter guy. I guess that surprises me, too. I like how you talk about Paul George there getting into some trash talk with Brian Shaw. I think he'd stand a decent chance against him this year based on how we've seen him shoot in the preseason. Is this something that we could be a little excited about? PG looks more comfortable out there beyond three-point range and really just comfortable handling the ball anywhere on the floor. I like how he's come along.
Yeah, he worked hard this season. The two big emphasis that he talked about, one we saw almost too much in the preseason, was one-on-one play. You know, in those playoffs, he wanted to get better at isolation sets. So he did some of that and really overdid it, I thought, in the preseason so far. And then the other thing was conditioning. He wasn't nearly as ready, he thought, coming into last season because he wasn't expecting the minutes, obviously, with Granger. So those are his two things. His shooting has looked strong. He's just looked a lot more comfortable and confident, I think, as you said, Pierce. I mean, when we're seeing him on the floor, he hadn't been afraid to do those step-back shots. He's really come into his own even further. And I don't think it'll be quite as big lead, but I think he's going to take a big step again this year. I think he's got a couple more lengths to go.
I was interested about that because last year's Paul George, that everyone was anointing a superstar, obviously it comes with the double-edged sword of them not watching the Pacers most of last year and seeing yeah. The first half of the season that there were a lot of things he would do that would drive people crazy. Is he working on getting those things out of his game?
Yeah, one of those is turnovers. I mean, there'd be games, I remember last season, we talked to him and he'd have 20 points and 8 rebounds and 5 assists, and he'd see 7 turnovers and be like, I don't even care. 7 turnovers, that's hurt me, and that's why I'm going to stay in the gym after this, or, you know, what have you. He says he's been working on it. Sort of hard to judge so far at this point. I think we have seen some improvements in that department, and that's the main one with Paul George, is trying to do too much, you know, now that there could be quote-unquote pressure on him with this new contract, how he handles that, which I think has been just fine. He has changed his personality, and hopefully that never happens because he's one good dude. But there's real optimism with him and what he can do down the road.
He's one half of that draft class that everybody is really lauded Larry Bird for. That 2010 draft looks like it might be a linchpin for this franchise because George is one. Then you got Born Ready over on the other side. How's the Born Ready watch going?
Oh, you're just making him happy. He loves being born ready. He loves himself. But I think Lance is developing very well. I think he's another guy that'll be interesting to see how his role plays out. I think he will start the season at that in the starting lineup unless Danny Granger gets that calf really heals up. He is dealing with that strained left calf, so I'm sure we'll get into that here in a bit. But players just want him to continue to be Gump. And that's just getting the ball and gunning, because Whenever he does it, there's times you're like, no, 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 no. But most of the time, something happens pretty good. He'll get to the free throw line. He'll make layups. He'll send it in the corner to another guard who'll knock down a three. So many positives that come out of his game. The biggest thing with him that I'm continuing to be impressed with is his maturity. Just the little things, the little interactions with players and staff and, you know, requests that he makes and maybe interaction with fans. Much, much better than he was his rookie season or even his second season. I think he's beginning to understand what it means to be an NBA player and the responsibilities that come along with that.
I believe that 100%. I was going to ask about that because I started the year as a guy who thought Lance Stephenson needed to be with the starters and Danny Granger coming off the bench. I've flipped that because Lance, with that small ball group we were talking about before, maybe not quote-unquote small ball because Frank Vogel isn't a huge fan of that term to begin with, but if you toss him out there running the floor with Copeland on the wing, you got C.J. Watson out on the side, and even you got a trailer, somebody like Luis Scola who can come in, maybe David West is playing some minutes at the five. That's a group that can get up and down. With the starters, you got Roy who comes up, brings up the rear from time to time. David West isn't going to get out and run. I like Lance with that second unit, Scott.
It's interesting you say that because I remember we were on polar opposites and I was that way early on. I'm sort of flipping it, but I completely see what you're saying because my original point was those two with their units, they complement each other very well. With Granger, he spaces the floor, he opens things up, and that's a role I see Copeland then doing with that second unit. And the thing is, you got to ensure Lance gets his minutes because at least so far in the preseason, I think even more when he's on the floor, the energy's higher. It is a little more emotional out there, but the team just, I feel like, plays a little better when he's out there. So he's got to certainly get his minutes, and I think Vogel will. It all ultimately depends, I believe, on Granger's injury, whether he starts or not. And I'm also a big component that doesn't really matter sometimes. I mean, so many in these NBA games, teams will get up by 20 in the first quarter, and then they'll come back in the fourth, and that, you know, there's just so many big leads that, I mean, I think a lot of players will tell you, yeah, they'd like to start, but it's ultimately who finishes the game and who plays the most.
Well, I've got another question for you then. Who finishes? Because I don't know if that answer's any easier. Danny Granger, it seems, would be the obvious answer there, but you look at how successful the starters were with Lance last season. Is he going to have a chance to be in that final five?
And you won't like this, but I'll say purely depends on the situation because I could see so many times where it's a George Hill, Paul George. If you're down, you maybe have a Copeland out there. But so many times I think we honestly might see Scola West in that front court just because of what those two components can do and work off each other. However, there's no doubt Hibbert's one of the best players in the league and as far as the defense goes. You know, he's irreplaceable out there. So that's one thing you have to take and consider. In particular with this position, I got to think Lance. I really do.
I'm just glad that people aren't going to be watching Pacers. Again, Pacers aren't going to be on national TV, and people won't be getting on Vogel for not having Roy Hibbert on the floor in the final 5 minutes. I know that was a big issue against Miami.
Yeah, and to that point, I am surprised. You know, we hear a lot, especially in Indianapolis, hey, Pacers aren't getting the attention they deserve. They're not. You know, the Bulls are on, or the better example, the Knicks are on national TV, I want to say 25 times. The Pacers are 17, but they're a better team. You know, where's the respect? I honestly think the Pacers, while obviously they want the attention, or want, you know, the praise and everything, I think they'll do better in the spotlight. They'll do better when the game's focused on, you know, the Miami and Chicago's, and they can just continue winning in the background. I think that's better off. They're better off in that situation, like it or not.
And people who say that forget the fact, okay, Indianapolis, if you want national respect, you got to get the Pacers higher than 25th in the attendance numbers. I mean, the fans have got to fill in their end of the role, too. I want to switch gears a little bit here because I don't want to get Pacer fans all riled up against me. I want to go to Danny Granger. You said we were going to get to it, and by golly, we have. He has been shut down for the rest of the preseason. He's got a bad calf, and it's not something too bad to worry about, or is it? Do we have to worry about this?
I don't believe so. I think it's, you know, he's held out, which makes complete sense as a precaution. It's just, you know, it's just a mild left calf sprain. And I think if it was regular season, certainly if it was the playoffs, he could give it a go. But think about the grind of the season that the team's about to embark. There's no reason for him to be out there and risk something even further. I think the big concern isn't necessarily with his knee, because he says that's completely fine. We'll see if that holds to be true down the road. This calf, I think, is just a minor irritation. But does that knee injury ultimately lead to something, Pierce? That's the thing I'm curious. Does it lead to an ankle injury? Because you compensate sometimes. Will it lead to a thigh? I don't know how that exactly works, but it wouldn't surprise me to just see him battling an injury throughout the season.
Yeah, and I'm worried about that. I'm not sure that Danny's had the chance to condition like he would in his lower body because of that knee injury. And now you're throwing into what most Pacer fans think is going to be at least a 90-game season, maybe 100 games with playoff games thrown in there. And this is a guy who hasn't been healthy, really, since the Miami series 2 years ago.
Sure. We did see that last preseason game he played. Boy, did he look good. He had that confidence. He was finally getting comfortable out there. He was knocking down a couple of threes. He was jumping. One point I continue to make is I like the fact that he was jumping after shots. He wasn't afraid to push off and try to get in the opponent's face and try to block a shot. I think if a knee was bothering me, I'd just put my hand up. So there's little signs like that I was encouraged by that we saw with Granger last time.
And he's always been a slow starter. I'm not gonna count his numbers early on against him, because I know it's been a while since he's had real NBA action. But if we're talking about mid-March and the Pacers have been leaning on him, you say you give him 25 minutes a night, probably more, depending on what Lance can give you, and you want to play Danny Granger as much as you can he hold up for that? I'm not expecting to see a whole lot of chance for Danny Granger to sit, especially come the playoffs. And I want to know if he can hold up to that grind. And right now, I'm not sure he can. Are the Pacers better off trying to get something of value for him? Or are they going to roll the dice and go for it?
No, his biggest asset is his money coming off the book. Think about that. He has about $14 million coming off the book. They want to re-sign Lance Stephenson. Larry Bird said he wants to make it happen, and Lance wants to be here. That's one of the big offseason moves they'll have to decide about. I at least at this very moment, I do not see them trading Granger or trying to get something out of him. And at the other end, if there are questions, if Granger's missing extended time, what team is going to want him?
I can think of, if I'm a team with a lot of cap space, with the chance to take him on and dump even more money, a team like Philly comes to mind. It's not even going to meet the cap floor. You say you toss the Pacers a piece and get Danny Granger back to get more flexibility. I just don't want to go to war with Danny Granger as a guy who I can't necessarily count on to be healthy. I'm concerned about this guy.
Yeah, as you should be, and the team, is as well. You got to be, just because of what he's been through, his chronic knee pains, and I mean those things are so unpredictable. He could easily play this season with no trouble. He could have a problem here or there. Or it could be a nagging thing where, there's four games in a week and he sits out one every week. You just don't know at this point.
And that's why Lance is such a big deal. I'm glad you brought him back up, because I always have plenty of time to talk Lance Stephenson. I've seen a lot of people wondering if he's going to outprice himself out of the Pacers' range, because if he has a decent year, I can see a team like the, well, not the Knicks, because they don't have any cap space from now to 2020. But no. A team will want to throw some money at him. I can see them going $8 million a year for Stephenson, and I don't know if the Pacers can match that.
Yeah, that's certainly a big concern you have to be worried about, because someone will be willing to overpay for him. My first thoughts are Sacramento or, something like that. You just never know that, Milwaukee, say. It just, like you said, maybe has $8 million, and I don't think the Pacers, they really don't want to go that high, nor if they do, it makes things awfully tough. So, you certainly want the best this season. That's why there's so much of the season is it. This might be the year to just run and go after this title. After that, you sort of deal with your problems as they come.
I'm going to ask you one more Lance Stephenson question that I can't remember who it was. And I know you're laughing. I swear this is a legitimate question. Is he at the age, I think, of 22 or 23? He's still a very young guy who looks to me like he still has the potential to get better. Are we talking about a backcourt potentially for Indiana with Lance and Paul, if both of them are here for a while, as a backcourt still with plenty of room to grow? Can these guys be a dynamic duo for the foreseeable future? How much better can Lance get?
I think a lot better. I mean, this offseason he worked on his shooting, and that's certainly an area you need to work on. It was a lot of that outside shot. To knock those down on a consistent basis. He's always going to be that athletic weapon where he can just out, you know, it's quick off the dribble, can run, has some crossover moves, can do a highlight dunk here and there. I definitely think he can get a lot smarter with the game. He can, as he learns more through film study and those sit downs, as he learns more from some of the guys in the locker room, like Scola, like West, even Hibbert now. I definitely think he has another couple steps, if not 2, 3, 4, to take his game.
Okay, enough Lance, enough Pacers, at least for the meantime. There's obviously going to be more time for the Pacers. I want to get to the little interesting feud brewing between the Pacers and the Bulls. I know that Derrick Rose and George Hill have been quoted on record. I don't think that really means anything, but I'm also very much looking forward to the regular season matchups between these teams now, especially after what we saw in that preseason game a week ago. I mean, that was preseason, and Vogel and Thibodeau were going all out for that.
Yeah, in both preseason games, both here in Indianapolis and in Chicago, they're playing guys down to the wire and really taking it seriously. I say without question, it's a division rival because at least, you know, in these last 3, 4 years where these two teams are contending for that division championship, maybe Rose was out so long that he forgot about that. But Danny Granger, who's been with the team the longest, said without question before the October 5th preseason game, yes, we're a division rival. We want to beat them. They want to beat us. And a lot of that can, winning that division title, you know, carries into what we do in the playoffs. I just think there's no question they're division rivals. Frank Vogel said that as well. You know, they're with Chicago being in their way, so to speak, for a division title, of course. There's some rivalry there. I think Rose honestly is in the minority with that statement.
Who's better right now, Scott, Bulls or Pacers?
Good question. Good question. I think this second I would say the Bulls for the fact that all their pieces are together. They have that, and I think, but the Pacers are still figuring out is that bench. The Pacers' core is intact, but that bench is a big question mark. And so this second, I would probably say the Bulls, but long term, I would definitely, my thoughts are with the Pacers and what I just see an unlimited bright future with them and where guys could fill in gaps and holes. And you know, I have questions with Noah. There's already a debate whether he'll even play in their first game in Miami because of an injury. I think it's plantar fasciitis, if I'm not mistaken. And that can just nag and continue on through the rest of the season. Maybe he'll miss this substantial part of the season. Is Rose Knee going to hold up? You just don't know.
He's had some trouble.
Down the road, I have the Pacers. I'll have them winning the division. But if they play, I'd say right now, I'd take the Bulls.
Yeah, Joakim Noah's had some trouble staying healthy. And I want to go to something that I heard. Apparently, your boy, Jalen Rose, I'm going to ask you a little bit later about this. Scott just completing a little chat time with Jalen. But I heard him and Bill Simmons on their preview going over some possibilities for the Bulls, and one sounded actually really realistic, targeting a guy like Al Horford in a trade. The Bulls have some trade assets to work with, which makes me a little more interested in this. I think they've got the better regular season squad right now, just because Indiana's going to take some time to get everything together. Yep. Is that something to keep an eye on, just with the way the Eastern Conference is situated? The Heat are there. I'm actually more worried about a team like the Chicago Bulls because the Miami Heat, we know who they are, we know what they are, and every year at the end of the year, they're dealing with injuries because they're just not that deep. The Bulls are a different story.
Yeah, I mean, it really wouldn't surprise me if the Bulls do end up making a move. I heard somebody, maybe it was a TV broadcast, mentioning Ashiq from Houston, that he's just playing behind Dwight Howard down there and could really he could really serve a purpose.
Omer, the Redux, they get him back.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, especially the health of Noah that you just don't know about. Where their true weakness, I believe, is that center. And I think Hibbert is is favorable in that matchup. So, no, it would not surprise me whatsoever if the Bulls make some kind of move, before the season wraps up and the playoffs get going.
The other matchup is Carlos Boozer, who would have his lunch eaten day in and day out by David West.
Yeah.
That's another one. But, I mean, really, the game is going to be, if the games between those two squads are going to be pretty even, just based on what we've seen from the matchups. What about the rest of the East? We just talked about Miami, glanced over them. How dangerous is this Nets team going to be? I know they're going to have some getting used to each other, but I like how deep they are, too.
Yeah, I do, too. I mean, they have almost five all-stars on that team. I think the big thing with them is their coaching, how that situation unfolds with Jason Kidd. I think Lawrence Frank, I believe the NBA GMs in that NBA.com survey voted him as the top assistant. So he's really going to be a quality asset for the Nets. But, I mean, I still question, you know, can Garnett and Pierce hold up? What's the dynamic like between Pierce and Joe Johnson? I believe Darren Williams is a head case, so does he last? The egos get in the way. There's just so many questions with the team, but as far as talent is concerned, I'd slot them right behind the Pacers at number. And I actually changed that. I put the Bulls, so I'd slot Brooklyn in right at four in the East.
Man, that's good. And Brooklyn's one of those teams, I'm not thinking of them as a regular season team because they're going to take some time to figure it out. Jason Kidd will lose them a few games as a coach because he's never done this before. But they look like a team where if you can save the legs of Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett, maybe they slide to the five or the six, just trying to hold up on things, and maybe an Eastern team surprises someone. But then the Nets are a real tough out in the first and second round because you've got some healthy veteran legs and some decent depth on that team, too. They're a scarier playoff team to me than just about anybody else.
That's interesting. I don't see them sliding anywhere past five. Because that's where the Knicks are in my lineup. I put the Knicks or Brooklyn and the Knicks 4 and 5 respectively. And if they do dip down, it'd be past the Knicks. But that Knicks, I'm still not very impressed with what the Knicks are doing. They're I think $16 million over the cap or over the luxury tax rather. I didn't like the Bargnani deal. What is going on with Amari Stoudemire? Carmelo's already talking about his off season and a new contract. Not good vibes out of New York.
Yeah, in the bottom of the East, you're right, drops off real quick. I'm just thinking if one of those teams, say Washington, surprises people and comes up, maybe the Knicks are a little disappointing, but still come up, and then you got the Nets, who you lose KG for 30 games, you lose Paul for 20, 25. All of a sudden, you're looking at a team that all SportsCenter says is these guys are falling way short of expectations. But then it's like that Celtic team back a few years ago that met the Lakers the second time in the finals. They just get healthy for the playoffs, and then you don't want to play them.
Yeah, because, I was thinking about the Pacers. Darren Williams would have his way, I would think, with George Hill. I think he's put up somewhere in the range of, like, 38 and was just unconscious shooting the ball in that matchup. I like Paul George, defending well. Brooke Lopez and Roy Hibbert. That'd be quite the battle. I mean, that would be one heck of a first-round or even second-round Eastern Conference matchup should the Pacers and Nets be. And so many weapons, so many things there. Garnett, David West, two tough guys. Man, I'm already excited thinking about it.
That's what I'm saying, because the Nets actually played Indiana really well. I don't think the Pacers beat them once last year. I might be wrong, but they won no more than one game. I think they got swept.
Yeah, they really struggled with the Nets. I know they were beaten both times in Brooklyn, for sure. One of those was the end of the season game there. But yeah, the Pacers had a tough enough time with them there during the regular season. But I think both teams are in the same case where they're better composed for postseason run.
That'll be interesting to keep an eye on. Are there any other Eastern Conference teams that we're looking at? Let's stay Central Division, because I just mentioned the Cavs. I think they could be decent, maybe. I'm more interested in the Pistons, because they did some interesting things this offseason. Let's take us through that.
Yeah, interesting is the word. Josh Smith, the fact that Atlanta, I believe, didn't even offer him. Not quite sure about that move.
But they're so long. Oh, man, that front court. You got Josh Smith, Monroe, and Drummond?
Yeah. But they have so many many guys that play similar games in some respects, and Detroit, I'm not too worried about. I think they are probably a playoff team. They may win one on the Pacers. The Cavs is a team I'm intrigued by, with Kyrie Irving number one, who's one of the bright young stars in the league. Deion Waiters is truly impressive. They added a couple new guys, Tyler Zeller, Indiana boy. Some of those guys just intrigue me. I think the Cavs will surprise some teams, get some wins they shouldn't, and be a playoff team.
I think they need Andrew Bynum to do that. I think he needs to be on the floor.
I just don't see Bynum. Yeah, he needs to get on the floor. How much he can contribute, I doubt very little. I think it's going to be the same case as Greg Oden in Miami, where they try to save him, but ultimately realize not much can be done. We'll see, though. Yeah. I hope so. I want to see these players play.
Yeah. I might have some irrational confidence and love in the Detroit Pistons because they've got, I mean, they've got all these guys. They've got KCP, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, where they got the draft. Is that where Brandon Jennings went? Is he in Detroit?
Oh.
Am I making this up? I think they got Brandon Jennings. I'm like 80% sure.
You may be right on that.
I'm going to look this up just to make sure.
I know this is
riveting podcast time. Yep, there he is. He's in a Pistons uniform. You've got a starting lineup for the Pistons. Brandon Jennings, maybe you throw KCP out there. You got Josh Smith, Monroe, and Drummond. They're more interesting. It's what something that I wish there was an Inside the NBA camera crew following them all year. I want that to be like on my TV every night.
I can only imagine talk about riveting covers. That'd be brutal.
We might disagree on the Pistons.
Think about that. Follow Josh Smith around. That's exactly what I want to watch.
Okay, first major disagreement of the podcast. I might like the Pistons more than you, Scott. We might revisit this later in the year.
Let's do it.
Final question, just based on what we're looking at in the Central Division. I'm not going to make it about the Milwaukee Bucks because that's a really awful way to end this. But what are we seeing as the way this thing shakes out? Is there a threat besides Chicago and Indiana to actually take this division? It's got to be one of these two teams, right?
Yeah, no question. There's no doubt about that. I think the other teams are just trying to get enough wins to slot themselves in playoff condition.
But
for a playoff position, I don't see any way the Pacers or Bulls don't win the division title at one bit.
But there's no easy out any longer in the Central. Even Milwaukee is decent now, in my opinion. Yeah. I think every one of these teams can go in, on their home court especially, and take a game from the Pacers and the Bulls when they come in. I'm a little worried about this, the way this division plays out, just for playoff seeding purposes.
And, Pierce, like you mentioned with Brooklyn, Milwaukee's another team that surprisingly gave the Pacers trouble last year. I want to say they won. They maybe swept the Pacers up in Milwaukee and then won one in Indianapolis. They were no easy out by any means and gave the Pacers trouble. There was a couple tough games up in Milwaukee I remember having to write about that. It was just like, oh, that's just a poor loss by the Pacers.
Yeah, I remember there was one in particular that had me ready to punt on the season. And this is back when Cody Zeller was the consensus number one pick. And it was just saying, okay, let's tank the season, guys. This is over. Blow it up. We're done. Because they played so poorly against Milwaukee. And they ended up coming back. But that was, I think, the ugliest game of the year. That was the low point of the Pacers' season. Glad they bounced back.
That could have been brutal. How about your boy Gerald Green? You see what he's doing in Phoenix?
Oh, goodness. Is he doing his Skywalker routine?
Yeah, it was great. I saw him do a dunk, or not a dunk, where he puts his head above the rim. The other day he did a two-handed slam. He's still Gerald Green. I'll just be curious to see if he's one of those guys that maybe realized, hey, I need to step my game up and see if I can really contribute, because there's plenty of options in Phoenix for him to do so.
Phoenix is the perfect Gerald Green team because all he has to do is run around and shoot all he wants and make highlight dunks. And since his team's horrible, no one's really going to care. He's the most entertaining thing about the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, no question.
That's his NBA destiny, Scott, I think. I think he's going to be much happier this year than with all these expectations in Indiana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although he handled himself, I thought, very well, at least when it comes to the media last year. I enjoyed talking with him each time. He was very grounded and everything. But I think he would be the first to tell you that things didn't go at all as he hoped. But he is ecstatic to be in the league after some trying overseas.
Which tells you about all you need to know about his stance last year as a player, that he's thrilled to still be in the league.
I can't believe we're wasting time on him.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, Scott. We've gotten to Gerald Green talk, which I think signals the end of the podcast. Do you have anything to plug before we let you go?
No, that's about it. Just tune into Pacers.com, check it out, and it'll be interesting with the Fox Sports TV broadcast coming up this year, at least with the pregame, postgame. Jeremiah Johnson will be running the pregame show, so it may have a little different look with his input, and then the set. It's going to be out on the main the lobby area. So the fans will be able to interact a little more and see the broadcast live.
That sounds fun. I like that.
Yeah. So it'll be a good time. Let's get this season going.
Yeah.
Enough of this preseason.
Jeremiah Johnson's another guy. He's going on the list. We might try to get him on. All the Pacers media crew. We'll get them on.
All right. Go for it. Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely.
Sounds good. Scott, thanks for taking the time. Again, that's Scott Agnes, at Scott Agnes on Twitter. Throw him a follow if you don't already. And feel free to follow all the written coverage throughout the year. Scott does a great job with Pacers.com. Scott, thanks for coming on the show.
Appreciate the invite. Let's do it again soon.
Rock and roll. That's all the time we got. IC Squared is taking off. We'll be back next week, hopefully with a very special guest. Until next time, for Scott Agnes, Pierce Cavanaugh saying so long, travel well, until we meet again.